Y'all ready? We almost there, but we're going to start anyway. So my name is Brenda Huettner. I'm going to be the moderator for this panel, Potterize It, Sharing the Magic of Fan Culture. And we have some phenomenal speakers here with us today. We'll start at the end. That's Andrew Sims from Hypable. We have Heidi Tandy from HPEF and Ascendio and Fiction Alley. We have Melissa Anelli from LeakyCon, Leaky Cauldron, and LeakyNews.com, and Lisa Bunker, who is a social media librarian for the Pima County Library in Arizona. And what we thought we'd start with is a little bit of intro to some of the projects that our panelists have been working on.
Well, we're going to, ignore that right now.
And we'll get to that really soon. And until then, we'll start by talking about the intent of this panel. And first off, how many of you consider yourselves Harry Potter fans? Yeah? How many of you participate in some way in fandom? It's cool. Excellent.
Wow.
Look at all those people.
Wow.
That's phenomenal.
Sorry, yeah. I was just focusing.
Go figure.
It's a phenomenon, as you know, and it's something that we've seen grow over the years. And as people in social media, and with the rise of other companies and other industries and other projects looking to increase their use of social media and the collaborative tools available, we wanted to share some of the techniques and tips that our panelists have found useful in bringing the Harry Potter world to the virtual world and in increasing the participation of the community and doing the collaborative stuff and just making sure everyone has fun. And so,
who's first?
So we're going to start with Melissa's.
Okay. Let's see if Melissa really knows how to work this or not.
Go, Melissa.
Hi, my name is Melissa Anelli. I have been involved in the Harry Potter fan community for over 10 years. Actually, it's coming up on a decade. I mean,
no,
which is 10 years. 12 years. It's coming up on a dozen years. Shush. English, it's not math. And I started when I was just out of college and was looking for something to sort of fill the time. And I eventually ended up working on a blog called The Leaky Cauldron. I'm going to show you how it was absolutely the height of technological prowess at the time, if I could do it. This was a great website. In 2000, but the thrust of why Leaky was great was the content. And as we grew, the content remained king. And as our fandom grew and our audience grew, we became a reliable source for the Harry Potter audience, which was also growing really, really hugely at the time. And this is basically what it looks like now. We also do Pottercast, which is a weekly Harry Potter. Weekly. It used to be a weekly Harry Potter podcast, and now it's a once-in-a-while Harry Potter podcast about all things, whether they be the movie or, you know, we do commentaries. It's a great deal of fun. I also wrote a book called Harry a History, which is about the phenomenon, what's happened in the world because of Harry Potter. We also have now branched out into another site called Leaky News, which is our way of doing what we do for Harry Potter for all the kind of things that we love. But the thing that I think a lot of people would see as the most tangible way that our fandom has become, let's say magic, real life, the kind of core of how investing in fan culture can really change people is that. And this is a conference that we put on every year that is about being a fan and being who you are above all things. And on that note, I would like to show you a video, if it will play. How do I do this?
Try the arrow.
Just click it?
Just click it.
No.
Maybe just hold play on. It off. Yeah. Oh, it's fine.
Click it.
You know what we're going to do?
play the raw video.
Play the raw video. Oh no. It's very exciting. Hold on. Here's hoping it works. Is what happens when a bunch, 3,400 or so nerds come together through their love of Harry Potter and create and live out their fandom. And that's what I'm...
Terrific. 3,400. You got that?
3,400.
Next up, we want to hear from Heidi Tandy.
I'm going to move one seat over so I can see it while she pulls it up.
Well, you're going to...
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. Basically, I came into the Harry Potter fandom back in the summer of 2000. And is it playing? Good. And I joined something in August, or rather in June of 2000, and no, in June of 2000, called Harry Potter for Grownups. It was very early on Harry Potter fan site. And there's a couple people from there who are here. And as you can tell, when we were a Yahoo club and an early on Yahoo group, we looked a little bit primitive. And I am daring to share my original first post to the list, which is exactly the kind of thing that one should never do as their first post. I'll send it to you later. Because I'm actually an intellectual property attorney in real life, I got sort of brought in on a couple of issues that were occurring within the Harry Potter fandom, because at that point, a lot of, quote unquote, the powers that be, especially people over at companies that are not Warner Brothers, were overreacting to fan art, fan fiction, fan creativity, and fans who wanted to not necessarily own the product or own the source material, but who wanted to take their inspiration from it and do creative things with it and share that creative stuff with their friends and with people who they met online just by sharing their love of whatever it was that they were interested in. So once I moved on to finding others who loved the Harry Potter fandom as well, we started to organize things like a conference called Nimbus 2003, which took place back at in July of 2003, first time I ever met Melissa in person after working with her for almost 2 years at Leaky. And we had almost 700 Harry Potter fans from absolutely around the world converge on the Swan and Dolphin Resorts, and it was an amazing, amazing event. We're doing our 8th conference this summer back in Orlando. It'll be our 3rd in Orlando and our 2nd at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. And it's just been fantastic to see over the last 11 years, 12 years, from an intellectual property standpoint, how the world has just had a complete sea change between the interaction between the powers that be and the fans who are creating so many things inspired by their love of whatever it is that they're finding. And things go viral at this point in, you know, 5-10 minutes on Tumblr. People come up with something and tweet it around, and it becomes a major news story within a day or two. Like, as we all saw earlier this week with the announcement that Pottermore is finally going to be opening to the general public next week, it probably, the concept had, I looked yesterday, it had over 200,000 retweets and uses of the hashtag within about 4 or 5 hours. And that just goes to show the impact of social media on people just sharing information and sharing content with people. And these are just some more pictures and clips from some of the other events and things like that that we've done. The main focus for me at this point has been in sort of working with organizations like the Organization for Transformative Works, working with HPEF, working with the fan fiction, fan art site Fictionally that I'm involved with, to sort of calm the powers that be when they get nervous about fans doing certain things. And there are some things that the powers that be are never going to be comfortable with. But because of the way that the law has changed in terms of copyright and trademark over the last 5 or 10 years, for things that have nothing whatsoever to do with fan creativity, like Google thumbnails and stuff like that, it's really broadened the scope of what people are able to do when they want to share their inspiration or share their love or share their adoration of some sort of media or TV show or film. And by doing this, people have been able to create their own unreasonable expectations and go forward and do so much creatively, and also in terms of having events with other fans, be able to just go into the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and you're not only seeing people wearing Warner Brothers authorized t-shirts, you're seeing people wearing a lot of self-made t-shirts and a lot of self-made costumes and a lot of t-shirts from the rock bands that they like, or the fan sites that they like, or the theatrical presentations that have been on YouTube that they love, or people are now just printing out Tumblr memes and putting them on t-shirts as well. One of the things about Harry Potter is back in 2007, people started coming to us and saying, oh my God, the last book is out. Don't you think the fandom's over? And we were like, no, we still have more movies. But now that the movies are over, people were starting to wonder. And then, of course, right when the movies were wrapping up, we got the announcement of Pottermore. And it's been slightly weird in the last couple months because some people are on it and some people aren't. But everybody is looking forward to everyone being able to access it in the second, third, to the 7th books coming out on Pottermore, and just having more canon and more information that people can distill and discuss. But that's not stopping a lot of people from moving on to other fandoms and taking what they've loved and learned from Harry Potter and playing with it in other fields and other fandoms and other forms of fanish creativity. So that's one of the things I think that the Harry Potter really has become a boilerplate fandom for how other fandoms can operate. If something new comes out, a new book, a new series, a new movie, a new television show, it's people from the Harry Potter fandom that are seeding other fandoms now and just spreading the love and spreading the interest. And of course, we've still got new Harry Potter fans coming online every day as kids who weren't even born when the first, second, third book came out are developing a love for the series, and they're going and finding content that was created 5-10 years ago, but they're also using their own love of it to create something new. And it's been fascinating to watch, and I can't wait to see where it goes from here.
Thank you, thank you. Next up, Andrew Sims.
Melissa, I have my own copy, so I can just read off. I'll tell you when to advance.
Gotcha.
Okay.
All right, so I'm Andrew Sims. I'm presently working on Hypeable.com, which is an all-inclusive entertainment website. Next slide. But before I got with Hypeable, way back in, well, I got into the Harry Potter books when my fourth grade teacher read them to our class. And that was back in the day when teachers were actually reading the books to their students. I don't think that really ever happens anymore because there's all these issues of, you know, who are they appropriate for children and whatnot.
Of course.
And then I wanted to, after reading Sorcerer's Stone in class, I went out, got Chamber of Secrets, and it was all uphill from there. And I was also geeky at the time, still am, and I wanted to create my own website. So I loaded up Microsoft Front Page, which is a web designing program, or what you see is what you get. And I made this awesome site, as you can see on the slide, called Harry Potter's House. And I'm willing to compete with you, Melissa, over original Leaky or
Orange
Harry Potter's House.
Orange on blue, Andrew. Huh? Orange on blue.
Orange. Listen, I was like 12. I didn't know what web design meant.
No, I mean.
So that was my first site, and I loved doing it because I loved Harry Potter and I loved making a website. Next slide. So then, a couple years later, in 2004. There was a job opening on MuggleNet, which is the most popular Harry Potter fan site. And by the way, there's a little plug in there for the Harry Potter Alliance on the top news post there. And in 2004, they had a job opening for a general content creator. And, you know, I was happy with Harry Potter's House. It was going great, as everybody could, you know, look at that and tell. It was very successful. But I wanted to do something more that affected more Harry Potter fans. So I begged with the MuggleNet people to let me join their site. And they let me on. And up until last year, I was running the website, and it's been a fantastic time. As anybody knows, if you've been to a Harry Potter conference or a premiere or a midnight release party for a book or film, it's just there's just so much excitement, and the Harry Potter community is absolutely the best community to be a part of. So from there, I realized that I wanted to make this into my passion is online media. Love online media. So from there, next slide. I'm now doing Hypeable, which is a general entertainment website. And the goal with Hypeable is to take the passion of MuggleNet and take it to all of the fandoms. And we'll discuss ways that happens later on in this panel. But this is my long-term project now. And next slide. We've also branched out into other things that fans love. And one of those is online radio, which is known to most people as podcasts. And the beauty of podcasts is that there's no limits. It's not like traditional radio where you're told what you can say for how long you can say it. Podcasts are, anybody can create a podcast and say whatever they want and get in no trouble or get any flack. They just do what they want. And so on Hypeable, we have all these podcasts that are up on the screen right now. And they're all by fans for the fans. So you listen to it. And one of the most common compliments we've gotten about the shows is that people will say, I feel like you guys are our Harry Potter friends, for example. Because a lot of people, they could talk with Harry Potter, with their friends, but not as passionately as we do. You know, you can't really sit down with you can, but it's rare that you could sit down with a friend and talk Harry Potter with them for, you know, an hour or two. They may get bored and, you know, stop talking to you because they're afraid you'll bore them again. So anyway, that's what we're doing with Hypeable and the podcast.
And last but not least, we have Lisa Bunker, who is going to share a project where she took Harry Potter fandom lessons and brought them elsewhere.
Afternoon, everyone. If you know the Wizard Rock group, Madam Pince and the Librarians, no, I'm not with the band. I just use the name. I'm Lisa Bunker. I'm the social media librarian for Pima County Public Library. Our system serves about over a million people in the Tucson metropolitan area. I'm here because I'm also a Harry Potter fan, fascinated by what my fellow fans are creating online. In fact, there's some valuable ideas here that I think that libraries, nonprofits, small business, and other, you know, very kind of close-knit groups can adapt, especially in the areas of events publicity and online community building. I know you want to hear more from Melissa, Andrew, and Heidi, but this has been something I've been studying and thinking about for a long time. For starters, I believe that the question isn't, does fandom have a trick or two that I can use it in my online community toolkit? It may, but the question is really, what can my organization do to get back in touch with why we're here? Let's just call this finding your fan base. Because fandom success is not just, it just isn't separable from having a pool of people who believe in what you're doing, both inside and outside your organization. You can talk strategy and value statements and guidelines, but you're not connecting with your own passionate dreamers if you're not connecting with your passionate dreamers and your makers. If the people speaking for you are not embedded where your energy is, it's just not going to work as well for you. It just can't be manufactured. I got sucked into fandom about 2004 while searching for book-centric community online. Within a few months, I was providing reference assistance to forum posters and collaborating with a maths teacher from England to create the site you see above, an index to J.K. Rowling's interviews. It was so fun. It was like being Hogwarts librarian Madam Pince, but, you know, actually helpful. I had a blast. I also wanted to try out some of the ideas I was seeing in the Potter community in my workplace at the public library. The problem is that when I would talk to library staff about what I was noticing online, most people just shake their heads. They'd say things like, but they have ad income and a huge pool of crazed helpers who are up all night on their computers. We can't do that, and we just lost a staff member besides. They were missing the point. Recently, one of our librarians, Justine Hernandez, had a funky new idea. Let's start a seed library. Admin loved it, but there was no budget to speak of. So Justine got donated heirloom seeds and retrieved some old card catalogs to store the seeds in. Another problem, seed sorting and repackaging turned out to be very time consuming. Did I mention Justine's part time? What did she do? She built the seed library's fan base, first starting with coworkers and friends, then she started talking to other gardening support organizations. When it was time for the seeds to be sorted and packaged, she organized what you see on the picture here, which is, she called them seed sorting pachangas or hootenannies on Saturday mornings in the library. And she also launched, yeah, she's great. She launched a Facebook page even before there was a logo or a definite name because she knew it was a great way to create connections. She developed her fan base. I know you have people like this where you work. Are you listening to them? Are you empowering them? As we were creating the Facebook page together, I didn't tell her what to do except to say, use your own voice and let your passion show. Boy, did it. Soon I was learning from her, actually. Seed library events like the Pachanga in the previous picture were publicized almost entirely online on Facebook, Twitter, and in our own library website. In case you're worried, we did do formal social media training later. My county does have rules about it. So how did it turn out? Over 2,000 people showed up for the Seed Library grand opening. We had a great variety of vendors, including a booth for a new hackerspace where they're making seed bombs out of clay. And the Seed Library itself is popular too. In its first 3 weeks, over 1,500 seed packets were borrowed. 3 weeks. In a little over 3 months, Justine has built something very real and valuable. But Pima County doesn't just have a new seed library, they also have a new online community where they can keep up with gardening, sustainability, community gardens, farmers markets, and all written and illustrated in a very engaging way. We may have gained something even more important to our library's continued future. Tucsonans are thinking about their own library's role in fresh ways, and perhaps about the nature of sharing itself. Your organization may not have Harry Potter fandom behind you, but the kind of loyalty and momentum that they create online is entirely within your reach. That's it. Before I turn the projector off, I wanted to show you the image that gave me the idea for this panel in the first place. This was posted on the LeakyCon website after their 2011 conference ended, and it made me realize what was wrong with our long-standing publicity cycle at the public library. I hope we get a chance to talk about this later, but this was essentially a thank you wrap-up while we did it screen. That what impressed me about it was clearly there had been planning for it. It wasn't something that was put together at the last minute. That this thank you and sort of maybe
it might have been put together.
I could be wrong.
No, we were.
No, so yeah. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. Thanks.
Thank you. Now we are going to take questions if you want. I guess is the microphone there live? Is that what that's for? From the center. Oh, thank you. So if anybody has questions about either what our panelists have done or how to apply it in your work, please come to the microphone. But I will kick off with the first question. And so it's all about community, as we learn here at South by Southwest. And so what are things you've done to create community, and what was the biggest chance that you took, not knowing, you know, how things would turn out? Who wants to go first?
I think one of the biggest early signs of community was with the news. Well, there's a few sections. Forums, first of all. Harry Potter forums, absolutely. But news as well, because with sites like MuggleNet and Leaky, there'd be a big news story and people would start to add comments on it. And, you know, that's a very basic feature, but when the diehard fans are all converging on this one news post about J.K. Rowling releasing the cover for Order of the Phoenix, or this one thread in a forum, there's suddenly this huge outpouring of reaction, a very passionate reaction too, and they're looking at every little aspect of the cover. So in terms of like early on, I think, you know, direct interaction online through the websites was a big one.
Mm-hmm. For me, I think the biggest risk that I took was really going forward and creating a one fandom, all-encompassing fan fiction and fan creativity site at a time where many, many fandomers who'd come to Harry Potter from other fandoms or who were avoiding Harry Potter like the plague because they thought it was too cool were saying that, oh, fan fiction is stealing from the author, fan fiction is illegal, fan fiction is a violation of everything that a writer wants to do, and it's horrible. And going out and creating something that was basically standing against sort of a couple years, 10, 12 years of other fandoms' history was something that the Harry Potter fandom, me and about a dozen other people who founded Fictionally together, took a real risk in doing, because at that point we didn't really know how Warner Brothers would react. We didn't know how Scholastic would react. And their reaction was fantastic, as we learned when we were on the cover of the New York Times, got a phone call on Monday morning. We were on the front page on the Sunday Times. Monday morning I got an email from Warner Brothers, freaked out slightly, read the email, and it said, "Hi, we love the story in the New York Times. Would you like to be an affiliate of our shop that's opening next week?" And we were like, "What? You actually want to work with us? You want to partner with us? You want us to be a part of what you guys are doing?" And after that was when Warner Brothers started inviting fan sites to come to the sets and come to the premieres. And this is something now that pretty much any movie that's about to come out that has an interest in appealing to any fans of any sort is doing. I'm sure that Joss Whedon's going to talk about this tomorrow at his panel, because it's something that's just become a part of marketing on a large scale. And 12 years ago, 10 years ago, it was unheard of and terrifying. And now, God, it's so much better for everybody, corporations and the fans alike.
I don't want to go over too much of the same territory other than to say that it's Leakey's entire existence and history is defined by this question. We literally look at what are things that we can do to encourage and enhance the sense of community growing around, whether it's a blog post or an event. But I mean, if we're talking about the biggest risk, it was when we did the first LeakyCon, because that is, you know, we're all in our safe little online world where it's just bandwidth, which is cheap. But then you go to a hotel and you have a $100,000 commitment and a contract, and that's a whole other story. But the fact that we've been able to continue doing them is only down to the fact that our core question must always be, what are we doing to enhance the feeling that we're all in this great community and enjoying it together?
I'd have to say the biggest chance I took was on the library's Facebook about 2 years ago, where I could see that my own friends were, if you know Tucson in June, the rains typically start in July, and there's this sense of anticipation. And the rains weren't coming. And I could tell just people were just obsessed with it. So I posted on the library's Facebook something like, I can see that we're all watching for clouds and rain. In the meantime, why don't we share poetry? Why don't we write haiku about clouds and rain and share them here on Facebook? And this was an idea that actually came out of the kinds of projects that I'd seen in Potter fandom, where the fan sites will sort of have little competitions and or big competitions and things like that. So my idea was to sort of have a game with my own public on the library's Facebook. I got 45 haiku, and they were all fabulous, and we just, you know, of course, everyone starts commenting on everyone else's, and it was this kind of tremendous, wonderful celebration of what rain means to the desert.
That's great. I think that actually leads well into the next question, which is other ways that that we can bring what we've learned from here to other areas. Now, Andrew, you said you have others that you do too, right?
Other
fandoms, other
yeah, well,
things
like
beyond Harry Potter.
Right. The thing about Harry Potter is that while we all love it, is that there is somewhat of an expiration date on Harry Potter itself, and some would argue it was the last book, and you know, I wouldn't have guessed that 4 years later there would be. In L.A. 2 weeks ago, there was a Wizard Rock show at the El Rey, and like, you know, out on the billboard, it's like, El Rey presents Wizard Rock, and I was like, never would I have guessed 5 years after the last Harry Potter book came out, there'd still be Wizard Rock shows going on in downtown L.A. It was just crazy. But I think that, so what I was doing with Hypeable was trying to take the MuggleNet experience and bring it to tons of fandoms, and that's what we try to do now by being really quick with the news, by getting all the news, by, you know, opinion articles that really get fans talking. It's all that stuff that, you know, it works great in Harry Potter, and it works fantastic in other fandoms too, really all fandoms. And, you know, something coming up right now in a couple weeks is the Hunger Games, and that is right up there with Harry Potter and Twilight in terms of the fans, the passion from the fans. So it'll be really interesting once The Hunger Games is out to see how they react, if they keep their interest, hopefully.
Anyone here a Hunger Game fan? Okay.
You should read them, if not. So that's my answer.
You know, I'm sorry, Heidi.
You looked at me.
We're doing a similar thing with Leaky News, which is that when we got leakynews.com as a way to like shorten our website address, which we got in 2000, and whoever got it, I always want to kick.
Rames.
It was the-leaky-cauldron.org, and so we literally got it as a shortener. And as soon as we got it, we said, you know, this would be great one day to do a wider thing and expand the leaky idea, which is that we're having communities around things that we love. But the thing that I wanted to bring to this question is that much more now than 10 years ago, we're living in a fan-centric culture. It was so weird to people I knew in 2000 that I spent my time. I was first on an online like role-playing Hogwarts thing. It was even before Leaky, and my family was like, "What are you doing? Like, I just love Harry Potter. Leave me alone." And you know, I'd graduated college, and you know, nobody could understand it. But today, people really do define themselves by the things they love. It's all over their bodies. It's on their Twitters. It's all they talk about. You know, and more, it's becoming more and more the norm. And so I think it's the natural extension that Harry Potter was sort of like the proto fandom in that way, is that we're the ones who took loving something and brought it to the internet in a big way and started to discover what the internet can do. And while we're still doing that, now the people doing that, like Andrew, Heidi, Lisa, myself, we're taking those central theories and ideas and trying to bring it to a more general idea of what it's like to be in this current pop culture landscape.
I also think that one of the fascinating things that Harry Potter fandom has done that's sort of gone beyond Harry Potter is before, well, in the early days of Harry Potter fandom, there were a couple types of fanish creativity. You could role play, you could cosplay and do costumes, you could go onto forums and do discussions and write proto essays and really long essays and extremely long books. You could write fan fiction, you could do fan art, but that was sort of it. And now, in part because Harry Potter fans have done things like the HP Alliance, which has now become Imagine Better?
The HP Alliance is still the HP Alliance.
The HP Alliance, but also has sort of expanded as well into Imagine Better while remaining HP Alliance.
The HP Alliance, by the way, is we jokingly refer to it as our political wing of the Harry Potter fandom. It's not really political. It's activist based, and it helps kids figure out how to use their love of Harry Potter to effect change where they want to see it happen. And Imagine Better is the wing of the Harry Potter Alliance that's starting to encompass other fandoms like the Hunger Games.
And also things like the International Quidditch Association and, of course, Wizard Rock, and also the amazing theatrical things, not just StarKid, but also things like The Final Battle and other musicals that people have created and theatrical things and ballet and all sorts of different things that people have created based on their inspiration from Harry Potter. And it's become normalized for, if you're a fan of something, you don't just have to write fanfic. You can go and create a musical and audition people online and create a choir for your fan site and have people singing songs related to or inspired by the books or by the movies. And it's just become something that is bigger than any one individual project. And that's the kind of thing that you see other fandoms doing as they develop. And one of the fascinating things for me about Harry Potter fandom is that we can continue not rehashing the same subjects, because we're not doing that, but every single day that goes by, every single new bit of information that comes out on Pottermore, every single discussion that people have brings a more encompassing and a different perspective on the stories that we all know and love. And because of that, having events, having things like back in 2004, we did a movie showing in New York City, and we thought that would be like 200 people show up, and we had over 650 people buy tickets within about a 10-day time frame. When we wanted to see if we could buy the clue card J.K. Rowling had written back in December of 2002, and we thought, okay, maybe we'll be able to raise $3,000-$4,000 to see if we can possibly buy the clue, and
$23,000
later, we didn't win because someone did more.
We also brought a lot of publicity to it.
We brought a lot of publicity to it. We brought a lot of interest to it. We brought a lot of interest to the fact that there was a fandom that was willing to go out there and raise money for something, because we'd said from the very start that even if we didn't win the card, all the money was going to be going to Book Aid. And they ended up netting something like, what,
About $60,000 American dollars
because of our donation and the $30,000-ish or so price point that the card actually
They were so excited that we actually sent somebody, a friend of mine who was in England, to a reception that they had had after this event, and they literally saw the person from the Leaky Cauldron, and the woman at the door went, Leaky, money! And it was so, because they were a very small charity at the time, that they're not now.
Exactly. And that's the kind of thing that people can use their fanish interests to do. You can go out and you can do something positive for social change. You can go out and do something positive for learning how to become a better writer, or learning how to become a better artist, or learning how to become a better photographer, or just connecting with people who are not from your community, either online or at a fan event. And that's the kind of thing that really has pretty much gone out and changed the world, I think.
That's one of the points I wanted to bring out, is that one of the characteristics I see in Harry Potter fandom is a very kind of frequent, what makes it fresh and exciting is that there's often challenges and projects and things that involve the community, that where the community comes together. So the community comes together, five, six different times a year for various fundraisers. There's projects and challenges that I think help keep the community fresh, and that's something that you could think about bringing to your own social media presence and your own communities online. Keep doing challenges. Don't get complacent. Another characteristic I see of Harry Potter fandom is that there's a cycle of continuous news, that there's always something exciting coming out. And especially for events, that the publicity is very organic. It starts when the planning starts, and from the beginning, they're sharing the news of the event with the fandom and asking their input. and all the way through, well past the end of the event. For most charities, for most small business, for most government organizations, that's a very unusual way of doing publicity, which is very PR and press release based and just not a continuous thing. So that's another characteristic, and I have more, but
we have other questions.
Hi, my name is Nora, and I grew up with Harry Potter, so I'm a big fan. And one of the things that I noticed when I was growing up and kind of seeing what other people were talking about with Harry Potter online was that a lot of the places like Leaky Cauldron and MuggleNet were these just great hubs where they were basically a destination, and anything and everything you wanted to talk about Harry Potter was in one place. My question for you guys is, now that things like Facebook and Twitter and personal blogs have become more popular and there are other places to discuss these things, have you found that your members are becoming more fragmented, or are you finding that these other sorts of places to chatter are driving more members to your types of sites?
I don't know, Andrew, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like the what's happening is the fragmentation is so deep, it's so multifaceted that there's no hub anymore. I can be on 8,000 Harry Potter Facebook groups, or, you know, there's no real, like, place where you know, this is the place where I'm going to find out stuff, this is the place I'm going to find the most passionate fans. And while it is a challenge, definitely, to keep people going to a website now as opposed to just engaging in their own feeds, I think there's real value in that, and making sure that we create an oasis for people where it's not just casual comers by on their Facebook feeds. Andrew?
Yeah, I think everybody has their own place where they just like to go, whether it's the design of the site, the people that they know that visit the site. You know, there's certain communities that you're going to get involved with. So I think largely people just have their spaces set. I don't think it ever fragmented the site so much as it did, like, let's say you make a comment on your Facebook profile about J.K. Rowling's new book, and you're going to talk about it with a couple of your friends. But you can go to a Harry Potter fan site and find more fans reacting to it, and probably a little bit more passionately, too. And they may be willing to talk about it longer than maybe your sister did or your mom did. Like, your mom may have just commented, like, oh, what's that, honey? That's nice.
Do you know what I find, doing is when I'm into something new, like Sherlock, you know, when I'm into something new, I find myself immediately trying to find the, like, alpha place on the net, because I know that if there's got to be, like, there's general fandom, you've watched it, you've enjoyed it, you've seen some stuff on Tumblr, haven't we all? And you don't really get the depth of it, because we as fans know what fans are capable of. I always sort of, like, go look for the big place that I know that if it's to be had, it's there. And I think that's what we as fans can really bring.
But also, one of the great things that the Harry Potter fandom did and continues to do is that we take the tools that other people create. I mean, yes, we've all created our own websites. Some of us have created some of our own back-end code. But we've all taken the tools that have been created elsewhere, like Twitter in 2007, 2008, like Facebook in 2006, like MySpace. MySpace? Was that what it was called?
That was a thing back in the day.
In 2002 and 2003, which had so many Wizard Rock bands on it that in 2004 it was really the main way of spreading around Wizard Rock
and all
songs.
Music at that time, really.
And all music at that time. And YouTube going back to 2004, 2005, and using things like that and incorporating them into our site. And yes, we were driving traffic to Twitter. Yes, we are continuing to drive traffic to Tumblr. But people are coming in from those areas because this is the first time they're finding out about it, or it's reinforcing their memory that they had been here, you know, a couple years ago, and they'll come back. And that's the kind of thing that I think fandoms these days are doing on an even more active level. There's a Sherlock Holmes or Sherlock podcast called Baker Street Babes, and they are they have a podcast, they're on Twitter, they're on Tumblr, they're on Facebook, they're everywhere, and they are one of those kinds of central hubs that's really sprung up in the last 2 years in a brand new fandom, more or less. And they're using all of these different tools in fascinating ways. And yes, you know, at cons and things like that, there's things like Foursquare that you use, and there's always competition for who's going to be the mayor at the end of the event of, you know, the random chair in the common room that someone decided to check in on the first day. And using those kinds of tools is something that you can really do for any kind of a brand. You have to, at this point, you absolutely have to be everywhere. When, you know, when we started Fictionally, when I started on Leaky, when I started on Harry Potter for Grownups, you could be on one place or you could be in two places. And that was it. And you can't do that anymore. You got to be in at least 7 different locations.
Thank you.
Ness.
Okay, so first, thank you guys for an awesome panel. I'm curious that, you know, as both managers of communities and members of, you know, of really active communities, what have you found to be the most successful on both ends of that? So specifically, when you're a part of a community, and be it on Facebook or even, you know, sort of within the web at large, what do you find to be the most engaging to you as a member of that community, and sort of the vice versa, that on the sites that you guys are managing or the communities you guys are directing, what elements of your efforts have you found to be the most successful?
I love breaking news days, big news days, because people just react so feverishly, and you'll just see the Twitter and Facebook counts fly up, and you'll see the comment numbers fly up, and then you do a podcast that day and get it out, and people are asking, when's the podcast coming out? When's the podcast coming out? Because some of these people don't have friends to talk to about it, so they like listening to the podcast because it's like they're friends, and it's like they feel like they're a part of the conversation too, which is really interesting. It's something we also hear a lot. So big news days, podcast, those are the elements that I love most about the fandom and when it can be at its best. Also trailer days, I live, and that's related.
Days.
Trailer release days, like Deathly Hallows Part 2, that trailer. Whenever there's a big trailer out, huge day in the community. It's always very exciting.
These are all days where you can really indulge your actual fanish core and heart. Like, I made a Tumblr when the new J.K. Rowling thing was announced. I was so excited because I was like, we haven't had a day like this in 5 years, and I got to make all these crazy capital exclamation points tweets and just be a total geek, and it was okay. And I made this stupid Tumblr that was like, I had a picture of the book, and I was like, I'm sorry, I need to go to a quiet room and scream so I don't disturb my neighbors. And it was just something I felt like I had to get out. I think I got like 900 reblogs or something like that, and it's because people are feeling that way. And so when you do share that kind of when you get to go to the extreme and share it, people react. People always respond. Trailer days are insane because, you know, we look over every frame, you know, so they're full of work, but they're also really full of gratifying response.
I'm actually going to come to this from two different perspectives. The thing that I love is watching something unexpectedly go viral. And yes, trailers are great. We know that they don't need to go viral. They're just going to get spread around. Announcements are great. We know that they're going to get spread around. Having somebody take, you know, a random piece of fan art that they like and seeing it end up with, you know, 7,000 reblogs on Tumblr, or, you know, 1,000 within 3 hours on Twitter with people retweeting it, is just fantastic, fantastic to watch. And these days, having so many of the cast members on Twitter engaging with the fans, and that's something that, oh my God, can you imagine 10 years ago if we had told people in fandom, you're going to be engaging and interacting with the people from the cast, and you're going to be sharing your love for the Harry Potter books and for the Harry Potter movies together, because they all love it as much as you do. And if I had told somebody that 10 years ago, first, they would have panicked that the powers that be knew about us, because, oh my God, how horrible. And second, they wouldn't have believed that there was a way for people to socially interact outside of long lines at Showmasters cons in the UK.
But to show you how that's true, of all the Harry Potter fans, of all the Harry Potter cast members, you have Daniel, who doesn't tweet, Rupert, who doesn't tweet, Emma, who tweets whenever she's got like a photo or a movie still, or, you know, whatever. The person in the Harry Potter world who's got the most active and engaged and numerous fan base on Twitter is Ivana Lynch, because she is a total, she's so engaged and excited, and she's totally unabashed about sharing when she's a complete geek, and people love her for it, you know. I think what we're all getting at is that when you really show your little geeky heart and it exploding, that's when people react the most.
It's about connecting. Like you said, when you made that Tumblr post, all caps, and you got 900 shares, if somebody can get behind it, just if somebody reads Melissa's Tumblr post and like, oh yeah, this is me, reblog,
or
retweet.
Just like.
What?
Or just like.
Oh,
you know,
like.
Just clicking that you like it.
Yeah,
and
but
it's,
they like to push it to their people too, like, hey, this is me too.
Which leads to the sort of the flip side, which is the thing that I hate, which is if you miss something these days by 2 or 3 hours, it's almost impossible to catch up. When Half-Blood Prince came out in 2005, I had a newborn. I didn't get the book until 19 hours after they got it in the UK. and everyone was finished. Because you got
I was in the UK. Okay,
you were
sorry.
In the UK.
Haven't recovered yet, right?
I haven't, because I finished the book more than a day after everybody else had, and I never caught up on the discussions, and I never caught up on the squee, and I never caught up on RAB in terms of
You've
the
made up for it.
But I haven't. There's still a hole in me that missed this fandom experience.
Well, there's a new book coming
I'll never
out.
Get it
That's
back.
Your chance.
I have to say, on my library's community, the two things I look forward to most are when I do a post that I know is going to surprise people. People expect kind of staid kind of comfort and you know, certain things from the library, and what I love is surprising them with the kinds of things the library is doing. But the second thing I love is when you can actually get conversations going that remind me of what happens in fandom on the library's Facebook and other places. So when you do hit that button, when you do connect, that's just kind of a high for me. Yeah.
Another question?
Well, first I'd like to say we have 10 minutes, but I do have a question. I guess it's fair to say that all of you guys are fairly fanatic people, and I just want to know, like, what media are you guys really excited about right now? Like, what books, TV shows, stuff
answer.
Like that? Also, projects that you're working on that you're really excited about? So.
Yeah, that's...
And allowed to talk about
okay.
the public forum.
I'm going to try to do it fast. Hunger Games, Sherlock, I love Smash. I love Smash. I'm falling out of love with Glee. I'll leave it. Books, everything John Green writes should be memorized. And projects, I'm a consultant on Pottermore, and I'm working on my first novel.
Sherlock. Of course. Cannot wait for Hunger Games. I'm trying everything I possibly can to get to one of the early showings that's happening down in Miami. Absolutely, desperately waiting for it. Just got Naomi Novik's new Temeraire Dragon book. Cannot wait to actually have a chance to sit down and read it. In terms of new YA novels, Beth Rivas's Across the Universe series is mind-blowingly fantastic, and I highly recommend it to everybody. You know, for me, that's pretty much it right now. Loving Once Upon a Time, but I'm not really fannish about it. And I think that that's the distinction, because I'm being fannish about Hunger Games. I'm being fannish about Sherlock. But when it comes to Once Upon a Time, yeah, I'll read the spoilers. Yeah, I'll read some of the tweets. Yeah, I'm following some of the cast. But I'm not really OMG flail about it. And I think once Hunger Games comes out and I've settled down from that, I'm going to be Avengers all the way for a couple weeks.
What's really cool about The Hunger Games is that we're sitting on the verge of this new fandom about to explode. And I mean, it really has, but once the film comes out, game over, like, that's going to be huge.
No problem.
And really, I mean, Lionsgate is already, they're going to make 4 films out of 3 books. So you just know that they're feeling good about it, too. The estimates keep going up. It's going to be huge. But anyway, yes, yeah, so Hunger Games. Breaking Bad is a great television show. It's life-changing. Like, this 4th season, I was on the edge of tears every single episode. And Mad Men, that's another AMC show. That's fantastic. What was the other part of your question? What?
Projects.
Oh, projects. I'm all in on Hypeable, and that's a long-term project, so, yeah.
Oh, projects. I have another fan con in July back at the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and that's pretty much it for me because I have a bar mitzvah for my son in September.
Oh. I don't even say LegalCon because it's like in my skin, so yeah.
Well, and this is my wonky library answer. I just have the pool of people at in my library system that are on social media is growing, and the cool thing that I'm seeing is that social media is acting. It's not just the library talking out to the community. We've begun using social media as a listening post for the cool things that are happening in library land and in the book world and in publishing, and as a way of gathering our news and sharing it with the rest of the staff. So I honestly am looking forward to something that might be even institutional change as far as the power that people who are just working the front desk have in defining what the library is in the community in an even bigger way. So to me, social media is actually changing in a way some of the organizational structure of my library, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens.
I guess we have time for one more question.
Yay.
Yay.
Good. Thank you very much. My name is Toby. I'm running a a movie fan community called Movie Pilot. I have a question about the relationship between the studio on one side and the fans on the other. So you have been talking about Warner, and you have also been talking about how you have to have the trailer early, and you have to have the breaking news to really indulge your fans. Yeah. How is the relationship with the studio to help you to promote that and to actually be the first and work with the fandom? So that's one side. And the other side, how is the flow back? Do you influence things, how the studio work and what they do because of, you know, influence of your fans that you represent?
Way back in the day, the Leaky Cauldron's first big scoop was somebody sniffed out a link to a preview of the first Harry Potter trailer on AOL. And it was enormous news because it was down within an hour. CNN picked it up. Fans, fine, Harry Potter trailer. It was like huge. There was, we still hear stories this day of the angry meeting that took place at AOL. How could you leave that? Fine, you know, like there were reverbs. Now they send us the links 24 hours ahead of time and say you can post it at X, you know, time. There was like furor that then, and now they're like, here, please. Because and it took, I mean, for about a year, I was emailing and calling Warner Brothers back when Leaky was the first site to sort of get these kinds of things from them, because I was kind of obsessed and I had a job that I didn't like, so I didn't mind giving a lot of time to it. And I would send them emails like, I want to set up a relationship. And finally, like after like 25 phone calls one day and being transferred, I got on the phone with one person who transferred me to another person. Suddenly we were going to the junket. Suddenly we were going to the set. And it took literally that kind of like patient drilling. And now they're like all in. They can't wait to have the fans kind of do a lot of the work for them, you know?
Yeah. So you get to meet earlier than Apple iTunes?
No, I mean, it's like an hour before, you know, that they want you to be ready because they know that you're a really good resource for them to hit the social media button, you know.
And it's important to stay in their good graces because really they have you by the neck. They have no reason to be working with you. I mean, so if you annoy them, they can screw you over. But yeah, like Melissa was saying, in terms of like getting working with Warner Brothers, with Twilight and Hunger Games, these are different studios. And Summit, for example, was very hard with fans at the beginning, but now they're the best. And Lionsgate, they're still learning, but it's okay. They'll get there.
They'll get there.
But it just takes a while for these guys to learn how the studios can successfully work with the fan sites. They don't take them seriously sometimes, so it takes a little learning to see what impact that these fan sites do have. And that's when they get into it. And they're all great people. It's just, because there's entertainment sites, a general entertainment site, and then there's a fan site.
Right.
And I think sometimes they look at fan sites and see it as less of a site.
Right.
Some can be, but most of these fan sites are just as good as general entertainment sites.
It takes
them professionalism.
It takes them understanding the difference, which is like, as an entertainment site, you put something on Entertainment Weekly, you get a lot of response and people are being excited. But like, but there's nothing like when the hardcore of fans get something, they can make something viral in a second. Even in an entertainment site can be five times the size and not have that response, you know?
Yeah, I think there's something visceral about fan response that movie studio just can't manufacture. I think there's a real authenticity to what happens coming out of the fans and their extreme excitement over something new that is so much more powerful.
And as Andrew was saying, not everybody gets it. At this point, I think that there are people within all the film studios and all the TV production houses that understand it. And I think it's, from what I've heard, similar on the music side. I have some friends who do PR, you know, specifically for different bands. But when you move beyond that, and also books, but when you move beyond that to other types of fan interactions, they still want to have a 30-day turnaround time or a 60-day turnaround time on approving what you want to tweet. And you can't viably work that way in this kind of an industry. We're not faxing things. We're not FedExing things back and forth. And it's only 140 characters in the first place. And if you have a problem with it, it should take you about 90 seconds to figure out that you have a problem with it, even if you can't come up with the exact solution. So that's something that I hope in the next 2 or 3 years is really going to change as more and more people who started off in the Harry Potter fandom or who started off in the Twilight fandom or the X-Files fandom move into positions of power within those kinds of businesses, and they have seen it, or they've seen it from their personal experience or for their friends' experience or their siblings' experience, and they take that knowledge and they use it from the corporate perspective. I hope.
Are you running a movie site, you said?
Yes.
Were you looking to do that? Like, get in contact with studios?
Yes.
Okay.
Just do it.
Just do it. Yeah. Give them your numbers, your readership numbers. Be nice to them. And, you know, they'll learn. You could probably get into screenings eventually. Like, that's, Hyperbole is relatively new, and we're slowly building up studio connections and getting into screenings and whatnot. They care about readership, you know, and being nice.
How about the other way around? How do you influence their work and their promotion?
You show them a response. You show them 5,000 comments on something. You show them that it's going to be beneficial for them to shoot you something here and there. And when Leaky started doing that, when it started blowing up, that's when we got a lot of, you know, they like the numbers. But it doesn't always have to be numbers. It could just be enthusiasm. You say, you are connecting right to the heart of the people who love this the most, and I can help you do that.
Yeah.
Or the fans will see something that the corporation didn't see, like a misplaced or a missing comma on.
Oh my God, the comma. There was a poster that came out for movie 4, and a comma was missing. Four. And a comma was missing, and the fans rose up against Warner Brothers, and they changed it. It was a little comma. Everything's about to change, you will lose everything, comma, Harry.
Yeah.
Whatever it was. Comma, Harry, there was no comma. And about a year later, I was in a Warner Brothers executive office, and it was on the wall, and he looked at me, and he put his finger up, and he's like, I was like, what do you want me to do?
We're actually out of time at this point. I know that I'll be around, our panelists will be around most of the week.
I'm also doing a book signing at the Convention Center at 5:15 in the bookstore.
Excellent. So thank you very much.